Time to talk all things tech. Fevzi Turkout, the gadget detective, with us as usual morning or just about afternoon. Fevzi.
Afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. We shall get on to your gadgets of the week in just a moment. First of all, what is the burning issue that you thought we should be debating today?
Okay, well, Elon Musk's company Neuralink has just won FDA approval, Food and Drug Administration approval, to carry out a human study. So Neuralink is a company that was co-founded by Elon Musk in 2016, and it is designed to create a working and safe brain-computer interface. And there's a number of companies working on this. So this is an interface that can communicate directly with the brain. So at the moment, when we use computers, we don't communicate directly with the brain. We communicate via our senses. So we see things on the screen. We have a think, and then we type on a keyboard, or we speak to it, and it and there's that interface. It goes through the senses that then feed the brain. This cuts out the middleman, as it were, and the idea is that we will build a wireless port, a Bluetooth port, essentially, on our brains, and our brains will be able to communicate directly with either other devices or indeed other parts of our body. And I'll come to why you might want to do that. But it is the ultimate step, because if you think about the history of computers, back in the day, IBM once said that the world market for computers this year would be three computers, because there were things that there were things that governments sold to that IBM sold to governments. So you know, you might have one computer in your country, and it's a huge mainframe size of a football pitch type thing. And then the mainframes got more affordable, and companies started doing it, and you could go to work and you could work on a dumb terminal, but the computer was maybe, you know, elsewhere in the building. Then I once worked on a project called OPD, One Per Desk. It was this revolutionary project where one day every desk would have its own computer.
Ridiculous.
So we'd go, I know, who'd have thunk it? Yeah. So we'd go to work, and on our desk would be our own computer, not a dumb terminal or a teletype or, you know, one of those sorts of things. It was your real computer. So we were getting closer to the computer. Then came home computers in the early 80s, essentially, and we didn't have to travel to work. We could have a computer at home. And then the next thing is that the computer became transportable. We could pick it up and lug it. I remember lugging one that weighed nearly 20 kilos up the stairs, nearly killed my back. And it was state of the art. It was called an Osborne PC. Dual 5.25-inch floppies built in, and a cathode ray tube all built into this. Not portable, but transportable. Then we had laptops, and they were things that we could carry around. As history progressed, the devices are getting closer to us. Then we had personal devices. So we had notebooks, and then we had smartphones. And here are things that are now fitting in our pocket. After that came wearable devices. Now they're right up against our skin.
Yeah. It's the next logical progression, isn't it?
And the next progression is, imagine over a period of decades, it has been coming towards you over the decades. It's now touching your skin. And the next step is it breaks the skin barrier. In this case, actually, they actually remove a section of skull to fit the Neuralink. So at the moment, this is for people. Well, obviously, it's still up till now. It's been tested on macaque monkeys, and I think pigs as well, if memory serves me. And now the FDA has said that Neuralink can go ahead and do trials on humans. Now, that's not just you and me being able to roll up and do it. It's people that are suffering from paralysis or in some senses blindness. And interestingly, there's a Swiss company that was in the news just a couple of days ago. It's doing something similar, a brain-computer interface. They managed to get one attached to the brain, and then they have a receiver unit at the base of the spine. The gentleman concerned was a Dutch gentleman who, unfortunately, about 12 years ago, had a cycling accident which severed his spinal cord, which meant that he was paraplegic. And now what happens is he thinks about walking. The device that's attached to his brain interprets that. And that's, by the way, that's the example of machine learning, and I'll explain that in a moment. But it interprets that signal. It then sends it wirelessly as Bluetooth, you know, something as mundane as Bluetooth, to the receiver at the base of his spine, which then interprets it as if it had received the signal directly from the brain. Yeah, so it's linked into the nerves there. And the man walks. And he for the first time in 12 years, he walks.
It's a wonderful thing then, isn't it? It's
a bit of a sort of clumsy walk, as you can imagine, but also bear in mind...
He's not going to care, is he?
No, he what he wanted was to be able to stand at a bar and have a beer with his friends, he said.
God bless him, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. And but the possibilities for this are almost endless, because although they're talking about blindness and paralysis, I would posit that you're also talking about dementia, motor neuron disease, Parkinson's disease. Yeah. All of these disorders are up for grabs now.
So this this sounds like an entirely wonderful thing, full stop, next topic, but I guess you're not going to quite say that.
Well, you know, look, it has to be done safely and there has to be strong safeguards on it. The first step is we fix what's wrong with us, right? So we fix these illnesses and so forth. But then the ability to attach yourself to augment your cognition with an artificial intelligence, which has got all the knowledge of the universe in it, all the knowledge that we hold accessible to you, accessible in the way that you recover a memory from your own brain. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to recover information from the internet, you'll be able to solve problems that you can't normally solve with your own brain, but the augmented AI. So, number of things to say about this. One is that's further into the future, because obviously they have to find a way of doing it that's super, super safe for people who don't have a medical condition. Because at the moment, people who will undergo the trials and will benefit from this initially, it'll be a risk balance, won't it? The potential benefit of solving this medical problem, which could be paralysis, mm-hmm. against the risk of having this thing installed onto your brain. But if we're going to start doing it in the future for people who are not unhealthy, maybe we augment them from a young age. I mean, you know, some cultures, they circumcise their boys at an early age. Maybe in the future, it will become common practice to install this technology at an early stage.
Then it's a whole different ethical, a much harder ethical question, in other words.
Because at that point, we become the last generation of pure humans, which I suspect we are, pretty much.
Gosh.
And then there are all sorts of other things like privacy. Your brain could be hacked. Are you augmenting the AI, or is the AI augmented by your brain? At what point, where there's a balance of power between those two lie as the AIs? But maybe that's what saves us from the existential threat that AI poses. Maybe we upgrade ourselves and we are the AI.
So do you approve of this decision by the FDA? Does it have to accept it's going to happen and you've got to test these things?
It's hard to know about this particular decision, because I know the FDA did reject on safety grounds before, and I know that it was reported that only, I think last December, it was reported that there was an investigation into the treatment of the animals that were being used for the animal testing. I think it was quoted that about 1,500 animals had died, and that because the allegation was that there was such a push to get it done quickly that some of the experiments had to be repeated and more animals were killed. Mm. So talking about 1,500 odd animals, I think, was the thing. Now, that's what was reported. I think Reuters reported that, if memory serves me correctly. I think, in general, this is something that should be done. For all the reasons that I've said, but it has to be done really safely, and it has to be done not only in a medical and technologically safe way, but we have to have safeguards in place to protect things like our privacy. For example, there's certain social media companies that have invested heavily in this technology. Those social media companies work very hard to understand what we think, what we believe, what we want to buy, how we will vote, everything about us. You really don't want a situation where you've got one of these devices installed and you can't guard your private thoughts and so forth. There mustn't be a way of your brain being scanned without you being willing. So there's a lot of problems to solve. Now, obviously, the sort of the sci-fi stuff that I've talked about, that's a bit further into the future. But we need to start thinking about it now, and not least because there are now going to be clinical trials of Neuralink and other companies. But it's a brave new world, and I suspect it's part of the solution to what's called the alignment problem. How do we stop AI from harming us? The answer is we become AI.
We are the last generation of pure humans. You heard it here. jaw on the floor. More in a moment from Fev C. We'll lighten the mood with, if that's what we need to do.
I thought that was quite upbeat, actually.
Well, yes, you know. Now I come to think of it, it's like very, very serious stuff, but there's an awful lot of positivity in that serious stuff.
You know, before there were Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal and now Homo sapien, maybe Homo superior.
Then what would you have on top of that one?
Hmm.
Have to find
Homo
a new
superior,
one.
Homo superior 2.0, I suppose.
Plus, yes. Yeah. We're talking at the moment to Fevzi Turkout, the Gadget Detective. You'll find him on Twitter, at Gadget Detective, and you can subscribe for free to his podcasts, gadgetdetective.com, or via the other ways in which you get your podcasts. He said, not saying any words that make weird things happen. Right, so on to...
Bill, your words always make weird things happen.
Do you think? I don't have that gift, do I?
Yes.
On to your gadgets of the week, starting with YubiKeys. What is a YubiKey?
Yes, okay, so I'll spell it first of all. YubiKeys. A YubiKey is a security device to bolster your online security and help protect you from what are called phishing attacks. So... hacking attacks have gone up dramatically, and particularly since COVID, where, you know, when people started staying at home a lot and it was harder to break into people's houses, criminals upped their technological game and increasingly broke into our online accounts, stole our money, our identities, all sorts of bad things. One of the ways around that is something called second factor authentication. So a first factor of security, a first layer, if you like, of security is a password. So your email address has a password, your Amazon account has a password, your banking has a password. And you remember the password, you type it in. That is something that you know, a password, something that you know and enter.
Yep.
But that is not as secure as having a second factor. Now, a second factor could be something that you own. So it could be, for example, a text message to your smartphone that you own. Or in this case, it could be a physical little key that you own and have on your key ring. It's called a YubiKey. It looks like, you think of it like a really slim, small USB thumb drive. Mm-hmm. They come with a variety of ways. So you've got the standard USB connector, then you've got the new modern USB-C connectors, then you've got the Lightning connectors, which are on all iPhones at the moment. And then you've got what's called NFC. A lot of phones have got what's called near-field communication in them. You know when you can tap your phone to pay contactless?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's using the NFC chip inside your phone, typically. Oh. So there are different ways. So you have one of these keys, and you buy the one that fits, you know, your use case, if you want USB, USB-C, Lightning, or wireless via NFC. You pick the one that connects in the way that you want, and then you set it up so that when you go on to, let's say, you authenticate the password for your email address, you don't just need the password, but you need to plug in or tap this YubiKey and have your finger on it. You need to touch it with your finger as well.
Yep.
So that's really useful. Now, there are other forms of two-factor authentication. For example, you can, as I said, have a text message sent to your phone. The problem with that is there are ways of hijacking a phone number such that the criminal gets your text messages and can reply, and you may not even be aware that it's being done. Authenticator apps are messy. I managed to get myself locked out of a website recently because of a hiccup with the authenticator app, and now I'm going to have to send them pictures of my passport and everything to get back into my own account, so it's a big pain. Buy two of these devices, put one on your key ring, keep one somewhere safe as a backup because you don't want to lock yourself out of your own accounts. Mm-hmm. But then it protects you not just, you've got a second factor, but it protects you against phishing attacks. So a phishing attack is where someone uses tricks, what they call social engineering, to trick you into giving away your password. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah.
But even if someone tricks you into giving away your password, if they haven't got your YubiKey, it's of absolutely no use to them. There's nothing they can do with it without that. These YubiKeys are easy to use. They're versatile because they can support a wide variety of different protocols. So different websites may use different protocols. They also work offline. So if you ever need to authenticate offline, you can do that. They're durable, they're portable, they're lightweight, they don't have batteries in them. And they come in different form factors. So some of them sort of stick out, you know, like a little thumb drive. Some of them barely stick out from the USB socket at all. They're just like a little bulge where the side of, say, your laptop or your tablet is. So really very good. These are not cheap devices. They start at around £30 and they go up from there. You can pay double that and you should budget for two of them. So really you're talking about, in practice, a minimum of £60. But when you consider what that security is worth and what could happen, I know money is tight these days for everybody, but I just think it's a really good thing to do. The other thing I'd say is, although there are a lot of retailers selling this, and I don't know what Yubico, by the way, the company's called Yubico, and they make YubiKey. I think they might be Swiss or Swedish, I think. Right. I'm not quite sure. I don't know what their attitude is. My feeling would be go directly to Yubico, Yubico.com. If I were buying these, I would buy them directly from them rather than through a retailer. That's maybe just me being a little bit paranoid, but I just, get it from the manufacturers, as it were. 4.5 stars out of 5, strong second factor authentication, convenient, secure, protects against phishing attacks. And phishing attacks are big these days. I suggest that government ministers should all use these.
We shall have to leave your other
bundle,
but it was worth it to discover that we are the final generation of pure humans. We will talk in 7 days' time. There's Fevzi Turkamp, the Gadget Detective, with so much food for thought.